Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 17th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast in the universe. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
So, Scott, how is it out on the Atlantic Ocean right now?
It's wonderful, I assume. I don't actually know because we're taping this a week in advance. But right now, and you're all listening, or most of you are listening, if you're listening on time, I am on a cruise ship, so... So look at it. This is how much we care about our guests now. Because I know every time we go on a cruise, a bunch of our listeners are like, oh my gosh, those knuckleheads are going to get on there and they're going to do that crappy little 30-minute telling me all the fun they're having on a cruise ship when I'm not on their show. And this week, we're just going to do our normal show, but record it early, and then I'll tell you about how the cruise went next week when I get off, right?
Yeah, because we can't be clairvoyant. That would be impossible.
Exactly. That, or that'd be awesome. Good.
I don't think they think of our cruise shows as crappy 30-minute shows.
Some probably will.
I don't know. I think they...
Well, given the choice, they would rather they have the full Ante-Up experience.
Right. I guess. But, you know...
But anyhow...
There's always a chance that Scott will be drunk.
That is true.
And there's not that chance... Well, there might be that chance that during when you're in the office. I don't know. I don't see...
Zero chance of that today. Other day, maybe. But no, I'll fill you guys in on how the cruise went on next week's show. But right now, since we're talking about cruises, we're very excited to be able to announce the rest of our 2016 schedule.
Exciting stuff.
It's earlier than we ever have before, too, so you have plenty of time to go. So no excuses out there for all of you, oh, someday I want to go on a cruise. We'll give you plenty of time to call the boss and say, hey, I need off November 14th next year, right?
That's right.
And then, of course, you know, we keep getting all these people writing about our cruises, and we love it, right? So the latest one, a real fun story, if you want to check it out, go to cheapflights.com. We're one of the weird and wonderful theme cruises.
That's awesome.
And it was a really cool story, too. You know, they usually when they do these things, it's all about poker cruises, right? And which is great, but this was all kinds of different theme cruises. Booze cruises, sewing cruises, political cruises. Apparently there's a cat cruise on there that I missed. But anyhow, check that out. There's a lot of fun stuff. Don't get too excited about it because we don't want you to go on one of these other cruises. We want you to come on Ante Up Cruises. But I'm very happy to be recognized by cheapflights.com. So check that out. But all right, so here's our 2016 schedule. And I'm very excited. We got some interesting stuff on here, I think, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, this was something that we hear all the time. And yeah, personally, too, you and I have wanted this one of these to really happen. So now that it's happening, we're a little nervous, but we're excited.
So. As we always are. Well, you're always more nervous than I am.
Yeah, I'm more nervous than you are.
But there is nerves.
Right? Yeah.
Well, let's start with what we are now. We already announced we're returning to Los Angeles. That's going to be January 24th to 31st, 7-night cruise. Going to Cabo St. Lucas, Mazatlan, and Puerto Vallarta, three great ports in the Mexican Riviera. That's going to be our only cruise of the year on NCL. All the rest will be on Royal Caribbean, but that's going to be on a newly revitalized Jewel ship, which I'm told it looks really, really nice now after the work. And those rates start at $799 per person. So all of our West Coast folks, particularly our LA-based and Southern California people, we want to see you on that. January, a chance to go in and see some of these ports that we only get to once a year.
Didn't Royal Caribbean have a Jewel too?
They do actually.
Why would you name your ships Jewels? I mean, they you know, you got to be different from each other.
Here's the thing: it's kind of like you know, baby names, right? You run out of them eventually, and then people gotta like use the same ones, right? You know.
But it's revitalized.
I'm sure the first mom that named her kid Chris is ticked off at your mom, right? Come on. I had it first.
Don't get me started.
But no, yeah, it's kind of odd that the two cruise lines that are... I mean, normally it's Royal Caribbean Carnival that are in the same breath, but NCL is in that breath at some point, too. So it's kind of weird for any of those three to share names.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to share a name. Jewel, everybody wants to be on the Jewel, right?
You know,
no one wants to be on Bag of Coal. USS Bag of Coal, right?
The garbage dump of the seas. You know, you don't want to be on that ship, so... The porta potty of the seas. No,
right,
we don't want to be. We want to be on beautiful ships that remind us of
the jewel,
rich
right?
things. Yeah,
and I love. You can always say my jewel's better than your jewel. You know that kind of stuff. But yeah, that'd be NZL Jewel, and so definitely want to see some of our West Coast friends join us there. And of course, remember, I like to tell my poker managers all the time because they don't like their players to get on airplanes like you know they haven't heard of the Wright brothers or anything.
Yeah.
We are flying in this world now, right? You know,
yeah.
It's pretty easy to get on a plane and get somewhere. In fact, this the cruise I'm on right now, I flew up the day of it this time. So, you know, it's possible, folks. So even if you're not in California, you want to see those ports and spend 7 nights with us. Plan to fly to Los Angeles January 24th. And then next year, or almost a year from now, April 18th, we will be returning to our Port Canaveral cruise. That'll be on the Royal Caribbean's Enchantment of the Seas. This is a annual cruise for us. We kind of move it around. This is probably the first time we've done this out of April. But that's going to make two stops in the Bahamas, Coco Cay, which is Royal Caribbean's private island, and then Nassau. And that's going to be a very affordable $449 per person. So it's a good way once the snow starts to melt and you're ready to get going and welcome spring, we got a cruise for you.
Awesome.
And remember, too, if your kids happen to be on a late spring break, you can bring them and go to Disney World for a couple of days on either end.
That's right. Or you go to even Kennedy Space Center.
Exactly. Very nice. They got the Atlanta Space Shuttle there now, which I haven't seen yet. So.
Yep. Place is awesome.
All right. Now, the big one that we're very excited about that we talked about at the beginning of the show, August 26th next year, we will be sailing to Alaska.
Holy cow.
And that'll be a 7-night cruise from Seattle. It's going to go to Juneau, Skagway. And it's going to be cruising the Alaskan Inside Passage and right through the Tracy Arm Fjord. I always wanted to say fjord.
Fjord.
And then the last stop in Victoria, British Columbia, which is a really cool port, I'm told. So I haven't done any of this stuff yet, so this is brand new to me. Very excited about it. And it's going to be an Explorer of the Seas, which is a Voyager-class ship, which is one of the largest ones. So there's going to be a lot to do, a lot to see, and a lot to poker to play. And you're right, at the beginning of the show, when you mentioned this is the cruise that everybody's been begging us to do, and quite honestly, the reason we haven't been able to do it is because sailing in Alaska is expensive.
Yep.
And one of our hallmarks here at Annie Up is to put on cruises that are very affordable. And so it took us a while to figure out how to do it, and now we are, and this is going to be a 7-night cruise to Alaska for just $8.99 per person, which is an amazing rate. So hopefully a lot of folks will join us on this great cruise.
I am so excited about it. I mean, you know, for a minute I was like, yeah, I'm not going to go, you know. And then I thought, well, I'd like to live past 2016 because if I don't go, my wife will kill me.
Right, exactly.
So there's another reason for you guys to go. You can take my money on the ship if you go on this cruise. So very exciting stuff. And it's so beautiful out there.
So I've heard. I haven't been yet, so I'll
well,
see pictures.
No, but the pictures. I mean, you know, I've seen videos and stuff and people doing this cruise and you see it on, like, the Travel Channel or something. I mean, just the fact that, you know, we're going to cover it in our magazine next issue. I was thumbing through all the images to choose from to use it to design the magazine and stuff, and it's just so pretty. The wildlife, the mountains, the icebergs, the glaciers. I mean, oh, man. I hope a ton of our friends go on this thing and just get the trip of a lifetime. It's so exciting. And it has really an affordable price when you consider what it is usually, which is why we had to dodge it so many years, because we didn't think our players could afford it. But now I think it's feasible now. You know,
this cruise can easily be $1,400-$1,500. So
that
for 900 is ecstatic. So you're right. Hopefully we'll get a lot of people on there. It'll be a big cruise. We'll have a huge poker room. We have a lot of space there, so we can accommodate a huge crowd if we get it. So that would be awesome.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, November 14th next year, it's 2016, not this year, we'll be doing our annual cruise out of our home port here in Tampa. We'll be going to Cozumel and Georgetown Grand Cayman next year. And we're still working out the final details on this, but we can tell you the rates will be low, the crowds will be big, and we are working on some other interesting perks as well, too, for that. So yeah, as soon as we get that pinned down, we'll let you know that. But that's always our biggest cruise of the year. And always had a lot of fun here at Tampa. All of our regulars come on that cruise. And that's one of our homecoming cruises, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's in our backyard. It's no stress at all. A lot of our friends go on there. You might even see a FASO or a DOC sighting. And I don't mean DOC as in D-O-C-K. I mean D-O-C as in Doc Toscano. So, I mean, a lot of, you know, it's always an exciting, it's always a fun one. We always get the mixed games going on that one, and, you know, a lot of sit and goes, a lot of everything. It's just the best trip, and, yeah, if we get some of these perks going, too, you guys are going to hear about it all year, because it's some good stuff that's coming up, so make sure you try to make that one as well.
And then don't forget, we have two more cruises this year. If you don't want to wait all the way to next year, we encourage you to sail with us, or this year, October 25th. We'll be sailing from Boston to Tampa. This will be a one-way cruise, 13 nights, so a lot of time at sea, a lot of good poker, and we're going to just some fantastic ports. So we're going to St. Kitts, we're going to St. Lucia, going to Barbados, Aruba, and Curacao. These are ports that we just can't normally make on our other cruises, so this is going to be a fantastic cruise. So get yourself to Boston, we'll get you off the ship in Tampa, and you can fly home from there. Or the other option is to stay on board, because right after that will be our last cruise of the year, November 7th, out of Tampa. And like we said just a minute ago, it's our biggest cruise of the year always. So you can stay on board if you like. I'll be on board all 18 nights myself. But the second cruise will be 5 nights, so it's a little bit more manageable for most folks. But you can come on that one. You can come on the Boston one. You can come on both of them. But the Tampa one will be going to Key West and Cozumel this year. So that'll be fun. Always a good time at Key West. And those rates are $399 per person, just a phenomenal deal. And we expect that one to be very well attended. And if you do want to do both cruises, stay on board. We're going to buy you into the main event on the Tampa cruise for sticking around and suffering with us for 18 nights.
Yeah, Scott's staying on the 18-day one because he's trying to get, like, the titanium status or something. He doesn't want the 7-diamond platinum, whatever. He wants titanium. He wants, like, lifetime achievement award stuff. So,
yeah, and here's the really tough thing about that is right now I'm diamond. You get the diamond plus, which is the next jump. Even these 18 nights plus the 8 that I'm on the now aren't going to help me. It's still going to be a while before you get there. So,
oh,
but get there I will. all right, but remember, for more details on all these cruises or to book, go to antiupcruises.com, and you can get the whole schedule of events, all the port stops, lots more information about the cruises. There's also a cruise guide page on there, so if you've never cruised before, if you've never taken a poker cruise before, you can read that and learn a lot more about it. And then, of course, you know how to get a hold of us as well, too. So if you have any questions about the cruises, email us, and we'll be happy to help you out.
This next item is pretty funny. I don't really know how to react to it yet, so I'm going to have you read it, and then I'll react. But it sounds funny, and it reminds me of something else that I'll bring up. But go ahead.
Yeah, you kind of want to go see this, right? I mean, probably not as much as I do, because it's hitting all my pleasure points here. But it's interesting for our poker players. So, you know, I was bumming around the other day on the internet and found out there's a new play that's debuting in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio. I think it's written by a former Ohio Supreme Court justice, so kind of cool. Huh. But it's centered around five presidents known to have enjoyed playing poker, and they're playing a game in the afterlife, right? And yeah, there's like Warren Harding and Dwight Eisenhower, people like that, and Harry Truman. I forget who the other ones are.
Nixon.
Nixon, of course, yes, absolutely. So the whole play, they're sitting there playing this game, right? And talking about obviously politics and life and all that. Well, like afterlife, I guess. And the loser goes to hell. Isn't that the worst thing ever?
Well, I would venture to guess that some of these prisons are already in hell if there is a hell. So
that's quite possible.
I'm gonna say there's a little flaw in this story already, but let's move on. Let's keep going.
Well, what I said, you know, hey, you throw in a hair metal soundtrack and some pictures of watered down beer, and really, you could change the name of this to The Life and Times of Scott Long, couldn't you?
Absolutely. You and your political history and your love of presidents and all that. This is right up your alley.
In my hometown, and yeah.
In your hometown. This is crazy. It's like you wrote it.
Of course, the whole afterlife thing is a little beyond me, but that's all right.
One of the things that reminds me of, though, is, I don't know, did you watch Cheers?
Of course I did.
So do you remember...
Everybody knows my name.
When Woody was in the play Authors in Hell? And it had
I misforgot that one.
You never saw that? He dressed up like Mark Twain? And then the older woman falls in love with him, and everyone thinks she fell in love with him because he looks like an old guy because he dresses up as Mark Twain. But she turns out to be like, what do you think, I'm an idiot? I know who you are. And she just thought you were eccentric, you know? But he was going to be in a play because he wanted an acting career toward the end of the series. And so he ends up sitting around and with these authors in hell. That was the name of the show, the play, Authors in Hell. And so they're like, he never got on because he was an understudy, but he had to be ready at a moment's notice, which is why he was always dressed as Mark Twain.
And so this is coming back to me.
Yeah, so the old lady falls in love with him, and anyway, so they at the end of it, he's really depressed because he never gets to actually perform it. The play gets canceled after a few episodes, and he never actually gets to go on. So they're like, well, Woody, why don't you reenact some of it for us? You know, here in the bar, it'll make you feel better. And you got a little bit of an audience, and he gets all excited. He's like, "Yeah, all right." So he takes the chair and he puts it on the ground and lights up a stogie, and he says some profound line to start, and then all of a sudden he just sits there for like 10 minutes, and they're like, "Woody, come on, what's going on?" He goes, "He's like Sam. All the other authors are speaking now. I don't have any lines right now." And so they're just sitting there watching him, and it's just hilarious. But the minute you brought this up, I thought of that, because you're talking about these guys are playing cards in the afterlife, and then they're going to go to hell if they lose. And these guys are already in hell, and that's when we think these presidents are already in hell. You know?
I'm madly interested to see this. I doubt it will still be going on when I get back up to Columbus. So hopefully any of our listeners that are in Ohio will go check it out for me and let me know. But what a great concept. And you know, one of the things that there's this artist, and I don't know his name, but he's done – actually, he's done a bunch of art. But the two in particular I like are Presidents Playing Poker.
Yeah.
He's done one for Democratic presidents and one for Republican presidents, and it's really cool. And every time I see it, I just sit there and stare at it forever and wonder, you know, hey, I need to buy this and put it somewhere, even though I know where to put it. But I've always been fascinated by how many of our presidents play poker. You know, we use that as our argument all the time when we talk about, well, poker should be legal, right?
Right.
But then just the fact of both looking at this painting and thinking about this play of presidents actually getting together to have a game would be phenomenal.
Right.
Phenomenal, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely.
So that's never going to happen, but the playwright here is going to bring us as close to possible. So, I'd love to see it. I hope it turns into a traveling thing and gets down here to Florida. But
that'd be pretty cool.
If anybody goes to see it, let me know how it is.
All right, cool.
All right, Randy, up updates. I always screw that up. Any updates?
Yeah, last week you didn't.
I got it right last week.
Yeah, right? You got it right last week. That's
any updates. All right. So one more time, our last call for our Annie Up MPD, MPD, MPD.
See, there you go. Three times, baby. You can't forget it now.
Most popular dealer contest. We're going to close off this on April 22nd, so just in a couple days. So if you are a dealer or you know a dealer, go to antiupmagazine.com/dealers. Fill out the quick free application. After the 22nd, we'll close it off. Like I said, we'll winnow the applicants down to the top 50, and then we're going to open the voting to the masses. And we're going to give the top dealer a poker cruise and some other stuff. We're going to give some finalists some other great prizes. And then all you out there that vote are going to be entered in raffles for a bunch of other prizes as well, too. So this is going to be fun for everyone. And remember, antiupmagazine.com/dealers. And deadline is April 22nd, which is just a couple days away.
Also, North Bay Poker Open. You can't forget that the Antiup Poker Tour is headed back to the 101 Casino in Petaluma, California, which is just north of San Fran. April 27th to May 3rd. That's right around the corner. And, of course, the winner of that main event will appear on our June cover. You can always find more details at antiuppokertour.com.
Yeah, this is a crazy month of travel for me. So right now I'm on the cruise. Not really. But right now I am. And then immediately I fly home and go straight over to Daytona for that great Daytona Deep Stack Charity Classic, which will be this Sunday for last-minute folks. And then I'm home for a couple days, and then I'm heading out to California for the North Bay Poker Open. So hopefully I'll see some fans both at one of or both of those events. But the 101 is always a great event, and hope folks show up and see them and say hi.
Scott Long racking up some George Clooney-esque type of miles.
Up in the air, baby.
In the air. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call to Four and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. There's another audio. I mean, what? Where did somebody just finally discover our hotline? This is fantastic.
Yeah, it's getting a workout lately. Yeah.
This comes from Lance in Houston. Let's hear it.
Hey, guys. It's Lance in Houston. And, you know, after listening to hundreds of your shows and hearing you guys mention dozens of poker rooms and literally hundreds, if not thousands, of different people and personalities and figures in the poker world, players, poker room managers, et cetera, I was just curious if you had ever said anything that came back to bite you or kind of haunt you, and, you know, if it's anything that you might be able to talk about, because, you know, loose lips, you get to joking around, and I was just curious if somebody had ever come back at you and, you know, didn't appreciate something that they might have heard you guys say. I just thought that might be some interesting commentary for the show. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
All right, so I would say the best way for us to answer that, or I can answer this, is I don't know. You know, really, you don't know. I mean, you know, we put ourselves out there. You know, one of the things I like about the show is we don't rehearse.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have notes and stuff, so we talk about it, but we don't rehearse. Uh-huh. And, you know, we don't go back, oh, I could do that better, let's do it again.
Right.
You know, we don't redo any of it, right? So the show's raw. I think I kind of like the show being raw. I think it just, like, you know, whatever comes and pops in our head in the middle of these discussions being out there. And obviously the danger of that is you might say something that you regret, or you think later maybe I should have said it better or whatever. But if that's the case, if it's truly egregious, like we're Michael Richards or something, right?
Right.
We're going to hear about it. But I think the stuff that might hurt us, have hurt us, you know, it might just be people like, ah, you know, I didn't like that, and I'm not going to listen, or I'm not going to do anything with them and not tell us, you know? So
yeah.
I don't really know how to answer that. I don't think we've had too much that people have actually said to us, hey, you know, I don't like you guys anymore, I'm not going to do anything because of what you said on the show. I don't think we have too much of that at all, but it's possible, I guess. But, you know, I don't know if we really get that controversial, do we?
Here's the deal. I
mean, we have opinions, but
we do. We tend to be entertainment first, and we tend to just be like, you know, chilling. And so he asked if there was anything that came and bit us on the ass. I really don't think things have bitten us on the ass for that, but I do remember.
Maybe nibbled around the ankle.
Right? Yeah, I do recall when we worked at the Times, we had Justin Bonomo on the show. And people giving us crap because we didn't really hold his feet to the fire a little more on the multiple accounts thing.
Right.
But then you and I came to a consensus on it that we agreed that this guy's trying to move forward with his life. He was a kid. And, you know, we weren't really a show about hard news poker journalism. You know, we were just, you know, having fun in a booth and with an elevator dinging behind us. So, I mean, we really didn't know if that was the right venue to do it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We were like, guys were coming on to hawk their stuff. And then once they were done, you know, we had fun with them. People want to be entertained. I didn't think people really wanted to tune into our show for news. I mean, we gave them the news, which we still do. If something big happens, we do. But I think they're listening to us because they want to sit around like the home game and have a conversation. It's kind of like that.
Right.
And maybe, yeah, maybe there's times where you and I could light them up a little bit, and we don't. But to bite us on the ass, like anything we've ever regretted, the one thing I regret was we were first starting the business, and there was a product that you had seen at the Vegas show.
Yes.
And I was just making a casual comment about how it looked, what it looked like, it reminded me of. And the lady got all mad at you afterward and said, well, that really pissed us off.
Right.
And they ended up not advertising, which, you know what, now in hindsight, they probably weren't going to advertise anyway. They probably didn't have any money. They were happy they got mentioned. They were just mad that I had said it looked like, yeah, it looked like
right,
a keypad.
Right.
But at the time, we were struggling for money, and, you know, I just gave my honest opinion of what it looked like. I didn't say that it was a bad product. I thought it was a great product or whatever. But at the time, it was kind of like, and we were all done. You're like, dude, why'd you say that? And I'm like, what? And you're like, oh, man, she got all mad. You know, and I'm like, I know, but we were just saying that it looked like, that's what it looked like. It looked like a keypad on the end of a keyboard or something, and they got mad at us. And they didn't advertise. And at the time, we could use the money. But it goes to show you, though, we didn't go back and edit the show. You didn't say, hey, that sucked, take it out of the show. We left it in. You know, because that's who we are. But really, that might have been like the only thing that I can remember of biting us on the ass, really.
Right. And like I said, who knows really how big of a deal.
Yeah, and that might not even have been that big of a deal. I mean, she may not have really advertised anyway. But and that was years ago. We're talking 6-7 years now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know.
Almost 7 years.
Yeah. Ago. So I, you know, but really, there are some interviews where I just wish that we could have said what we wanted to say, but we just didn't. But then again, we're trying to be positive on this show. We're trying to promote poker. You know what I mean? Yeah. We're a different medium. We're not some hard news hitting kind of, you know, it's poker. We're out there to have fun and entertainment. I mean, there are some instances where you need to hold people's feet to the fire. But we just don't interview those people. You know what I mean?
Well, we don't interview anybody anymore.
No, so. But back then we did. And,
one thing, back to my point about not knowing, and I always thought this was an interesting story. It's funny because we're doing this NEF MPD, most popular video contest, right? But I remember our previous poker cruise manager at one point, we were just sitting around on the ship one day having a beer or something, and he's like, well, yeah, you know, dealers hate you.
Yeah.
Hate the show. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And he's like, well, you said something on the show that they shouldn't get tipped. And it just spread like wildfire. And I'm like, what? And I was mortified by it because, one, I don't remember ever saying anything like that. But two, now to hear that it's spreading like wildfire, which who knows whether it was or not. But no one actually called us or stopped us and said, hey, you said this. So we were completely blindsided by it, right? So stuff like that probably happens all the time. We just never hear about it. So, but, you know, if you don't hear about it, I guess, you know, it's tough to know that you said something wrong, right?
Right. The worst thing that we do now is we screw up a hand of the week, and then somebody on the show, on the forums or whatever, will say, yeah, how could you play it that way, you moron, or something. Right, yeah. And even that, yeah, so I might regret saying shove when it's a stupid move and I'm just thinking about it in the moment. But, yeah, now we pretty much avoid all controversy, I think. So not much has really bitten us on the ass. I don't think – because we don't ever speak ill of any poker rooms or anything like that. You know what I mean? There's nothing really to say. So, no, I don't think so. I think we talked a lot more than I thought we were going to about this, to be honest with you. But, yeah, no, I don't think really anything's really bit us on the ass. So, but thanks, Lance. I think that would have been Faso calling in, Lance.
Yeah, it could be, yes.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com and we'll have Golden Nugget Las Vegas poker director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This comes from Jeff Domenge. He says, in a 1-1 pot limit Omaha 8 game, we were heads up on the river when my final opponent held up his hand so his neighbor could see, but he didn't table it. As he's going to throw it down, the neighbor points out he has 8-6 for a low. I chastised the neighbor for aiding him in reading his hand. The neighbor and another player said they simply wanted to move on to the next hand and wanted this hand to be over. I pointed out the blinds were not going up since it was a cash game. Was this hand shown enough to allow comments, or should they have waited until it was tabled? Am I playing ethically in encouraging eligible hands to be mucked when they've been casually shown to other players?
Yeah, it seems to be a common thread we're getting, too. So, yeah, the problem here was the neighbor.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody holds up their hand, you can't give them advice. You shouldn't be giving advice. And this is the confusion on this, you know, Rule 13 or whatever we call it for the Beau Rivage, but other rooms do it, too, where as a player, you have to make sure point out mistakes, right?
Right.
It's just a matter of when you point out the mistake. So if this player hasn't tabled his hand yet, your responsibility is to the other table players at the table not to interfere in the hand.
That's right.
But once he tables his hand, then every player's responsibility is to make sure that that hand is properly read and the pot goes to the right place. So that's the confusion here, I think, that people can't get past. And so, you know, Jeff, you were right to chastise him. And obviously they wanted to move on to the next hand because I think they all knew that they were doing something they shouldn't have, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Hey, let's not worry about it. Let's go on to the next hand. Rather than keep talking about it and making them feel the way they should, bad for, you know, adversely affecting the pot. So yeah, it's tough. So, you know, I kind of wish players didn't do this where they slowly pick up their hand and look at the board and back, and particularly in Omaha 8, you know, just turn your hand over.
Yeah.
Because there's so many times you're going to misread your hand anyhow. So, and if you're sitting there with a pressure on you at this point, right, to check the hand and double check the hand, you're probably going to miss something. And again, it's 1-1 pot limit.
again. What do you mean again? No. You didn't say that yet.
Well, no, but I mean, this is the kind of the thing we do too. All these situations are in 1-2-0 limit or 3-6 limit or these low level games that we all enjoy, right?
Right.
This is not, you know, the final table of the World Series of Poker main event with $1 million on the line, right? So, you know, no one's going to get trying to get a read on you because of how you play, particularly PLO 8, you know.
Yeah, PLO 8.
There's so many different combinations of cards and how you play that it's really tough to get a read on how a player's playing a hand over the course of it because, you know, you can do all kinds of different things. So just turn them up, put them on the table, and then you put them on the table. Then, you know, if three people want to pile in and say, oh, yeah, he's got 8-6 from the low, then that's fine. That's the responsibility.
Yeah, cards speak.
But when you do this kind of holding up and checking the board, one, it slows down the game anyhow. And two, that it opens up to somebody looking at it and saying, oh, yeah, yeah. Look at that. Don't forget the low. And then getting somebody upset and getting beat up in the parking lot. So no one wants that.
Yeah. So here's the deal. The other thing is, too, is I don't know. Like, was there a bet and then he's deciding whether or not to call? Or
it seems like.
That's what I'm wondering because it says we're heads up on the river. My final opponent held up his hand. So there's no bet or there's no mention of the action at all in any of this. So if it's a check thing and then he holds up his hand, he's looking at it. Then at that point, I don't know how wrong that guy is because just because he's not facing them down yet on the table, he's picking up his cards for people to see because cards speak. So if there's no more action, I don't necessarily think the neighbor is that wrong because there's no action. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But if there's still action to be said, then you absolutely say nothing and you're screwed if you'd say something. That's to me that. But if they didn't say anything, I mean, and there was no action, it was check, then I don't really think the neighbor is that wrong. Because he's just literally showing his hand now. It's no different than putting it on the table. It's just that the neighbor gets to see it first and say, you have a low. You know, but, yeah, okay, there is some inherent thing about don't say anything until he's tabling and asking for advice or showing it to everyone because at this point you're still helping. Because he could have mucked it and not tabled his hand, and then you helped him win half that pot. So maybe, exactly. But I just don't think he's as guilty as he would have been had there been a bet on the line still. That's all I want to say.
Sounds good.
Okay. Hey, we have a brand new O'Malley's Move. Let's get to it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a $2, $5 no-limit hold'em home game. It's a fairly friendly game, but the players are good and take the game seriously. We are at a nine-handed table, early in the night, and have 500 in front of us. The blinds post, the MP calls, and we're in the hijack with the King of Hearts, Queen of Spades. This is a pretty decent hand for this table, so we decide to make a raise. The standard is 4x, but since there's a limper, we make it $25 to go. The button calls, but everyone else folds. There is roughly $60 in the pot, and the flop comes down the King of Diamonds, 8 of Clubs, Deuce of Clubs. Our opponent started the hand with a nearly identical stack to ours, maybe 10 or 20 more. He's a very good player, but has trouble folding a draw when he's priced out. He also likes to set traps when he has a monster. We were the preflop aggressor, so we make a continuation value bet. I'm pretty sure our king is good. We make it $40 to go, and our opponent calls quickly. With 140 in the pot, the turn is the harmless deuce of diamonds. Once again, I think our hand is good here. We make a bet of 100. This time, our opponent thinks for a while, counts out a call, thinks some more, and then throws it in the middle. Draw? With roughly 340 in the pot, the river is the four of hearts. So, are we betting again? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This one comes from David Bloomberg, our resident Survivor hand fan.
Yes.
Great season, too, by the way. I don't know if you're still watching.
I am watching it. I don't think it's a great season.
Oh, okay.
I disagree with you. I am quickly falling asleep on this show when I watch it on...
you're probably right. It's not a great season, but some real knuckleheads. Yeah, that's what I like. I like watching these knuckleheads. So there are definitely some knuckleheads this year.
Okay.
All right. But anyhow, this is Poker Night and Survivor, right?
That's right.
All right. So David says he said is a weekly old guy, 1-2 home game, where he's 20 years younger than most of the players. Some of them play like typical old guys, but a number of them have some surprising bluffs or aggression from time to time. I'm in the big blind early on in the evening, and I'm sitting with about my starting stack of 200, as are most of the others. After four people limp in, I look down at ace of clubs, ace of hearts.
Okay. I like that hand.
I'm not a big fan of the pocket ace.
It's, you know, it's a decent hand. situation, I guess, could be better. I don't know. Let's see. I think I'm going to raise.
You think so?
I think so.
Pretty bold.
You know, I don't, even though it's a powerful hand, I don't like being out of position in any hand if I don't have to be. Right? You don't want to be in the big blind, even though you have aces. You still would like to see what everyone's going to do before you act with those aces.
Right.
So I think if my normal raise is, it's a 1-2 game, right? So my normal raise is probably 10. I might make it a little bit more just to discourage people. I might make it like 12 or 15 or something like that.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, if I'm going to raise, it's going to be that way. I mean, usually it's going to be 10. I might make it more like 18. That's usually, I usually jump all the way to 10, which I know is probably a big raise to begin with, and then add a couple bucks for everybody. But 15 probably, maybe.
Okay.
I do. Now, what's interesting about this is we talk a lot about how you shouldn't limp with aces and do that old gotcha thing, right?
Right.
This is a situation where I might be tempted to, if I'm disciplined enough to know that if the flop and the action on the flop is scary, then I need to just, you know, not compound my initial mistake by not raising, by getting married to the hand, right?
Right.
But it's deeply disguised at this point, and so I might take a flyer on just checking here and seeing what happens. But the better play, I think, is to raise. So if I'm going to raise, it's going to be 15-ish, 15 to 18-ish.
Because I agree with that. And the reason, too, is, you know, you get the hand so rarely that you want to get money with it and you want to play it effectively, you know. And so to get cute with it, you know, if you're not comfortable with that kind of line of betting or that kind of play, why get cute with it? You know, you get it so rarely, you want to make money with it. You know, you don't want to throw it away when a scary flop comes. You want to be heads up, and when a scary flop pumps, it comes, doesn't matter because you've got aces and you're only going against one person. You know, that's why I always raise with them. I don't ever really want to get cute with ace-ace unless I know there's people after me still, and they're going to raise because they're a maniac. Other than that, I don't get cute with aces hardly ever. I want to get paid off.
Right, you know? Exactly. And like I said, I probably will raise. But here's another way of thinking about it from the check standpoint, is that this is different than usually when people limp with aces, that's under the gun, right? It's that famous under the gun.
Yeah, yeah.
Limp, re-raise thing, which is what you're talking about. The big blind's a different story, I think, because when you're raising in the big blind, four limpers, you're starting to tell your story now, right?
Yeah.
So if the two story lines that I think you can go with here are, hey, no one showed any aggression in this pot, and there's dead money there that I want, so I'm going to raise and take control of this hand with whatever I have, right? And I tend to feel maybe take it down. Or I've got a monster. Right?
Because
most other hands, you're going to be happy to limp with, I think, right?
Yeah. No, let me ask you this, too, before...
I mean, are you going to raise here with pocket nines?
I don't know. There's a couple of things here that I wanted to say about that. One, there is a move in poker, when you're playing tournament poker, when you have this many limpers and you're in the big blind, you just shove.
Right.
Because they don't have anything. So there might also be someone thinking that there's dead money in the pot and you're making a raise with just anything, and someone with position will say, well, I'm just going to call because it's, you're just trying to steal all this free money.
Right.
So that might be that line
which
of thinking.
Could work.
Right. So that's another reason why you would raise. And the other thing, too, is I've totally lost why I have another thing. Oh, the other thing I wanted to say was I forgot there were limpers, so I probably would have raised more than what I said. I forgot there was four limpers. I was thinking.
Yeah, I thought you were a little light on
yeah, you. Yeah, I'm sorry. I would have said, I probably would have made it like 18 or 20. Thinking I forgot, so I didn't realize there were that many limpers. So don't fault me for that. That's one of the things I regret during the show. I don't want to regret it over another. One of the things that bite you on the ass is that you don't pay attention to how many limpers there are, and Anyway, so yeah, I would have raised
one. So it's not an argument not to raise, but I think it's something to keep in mind that I think you were narrowing your range by raising there. I think you're down to the two storylines. Either I'm just trying to take advantage of a pot where no one shows interest, or I've got a really strong hand. And whatever happens on the flop might, you know, well, obviously it's going to affect that story. But I think it's different if you're raising on a button. You know, now you've got multiple storylines you can go
with.
A big blind raise with a bunch of limpers, I think you're pigeonholed into one of those two stories. And you could run that story all the way to the end and win with it. I'm not saying you can't, but I think you got to be mindful that by raising now, you've limited. Whereas if you check, then you've got all kinds of stories you could still tell. The problem is that, yeah, you're very vulnerable at that point.
Mm-hmm. No, good point.
All right, our hero decides. He says his usual preflop raise in this game ranges from $10 to $12, and this time he decides to make it 12.
Yeah, that's a little late. I mean, again, you're going to be out of position, and that's not enough money to get everybody to fold. You might get a few callers, and I think you really only want one or none. So, to me, that's not enough, and I corrected myself earlier, so yeah. I would have made it more than that.
Which, going back to what I was talking about potentially checking, this is one of the reasons the raise is a little bit more than you normally would, right?
Yeah.
If you raise a 20 now, let's say, now it really looks like you're stealing, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I want this dead money. I'm going to make sure I get it. And you might induce somebody to call taking your light, which is great because now you got an extra $20 out of somebody, and they don't believe you.
Right.
Which is great, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I think more to think about. I would have gone 20 and played up that trying to steal storyline, knowing that I'm strong, and play that storyline up, too, if I want to.
Yep. Okay. So, yeah, I think 12 is too little.
All right. This nets him two callers, he said, one of whom is fairly loose and the other who pretends to be tight but has been loosening up and making some less orthodox plays in recent months.
Huh.
So, three-handed. Could be worse, but I think we'd rather be heads up.
Okay.
All right, the flop is 9 of clubs, jack of clubs, tray of hearts. And it looks like the small blind was not in this hand, so we are first to act.
That's, you know, we got two callers. For me, it's 12, that's 36 plus the other one. So there's about 40 in this pot. I got no problem making it like 25-30 here because it's coordinated. The three is an orphan, but you got the two to a straight and two to a flush,
mm-hmm.
and we're out of position. We want to take this hand down. We don't want guys drawing on us for a cheap price here. It's pretty standard stuff here. I think you really want to bet like 25-30. You want to bet enough that, yeah, okay, these guys are going to draw on you. They have to pay the price, and then when the turn comes, if it's a blank, you want to lay it down, you know, and take it down. If it's not a blank, then you might pursue a caution then.
I totally agree.
That was easy.
Yep. All right, see whether he meant it is easy. He says, I almost always continuation bet in these situations, and obviously I'm going to do so here because I probably have the best hand, so I lead for $22.
Okay, it's not terrible. It's more than half the pot probably, but it's probably still a little light. I think his betting is light so far from beginning to end.
It says the loose player folds, but the pretend tight villain calls. Like he's pretend tight now.
Okay.
All right. So we're heads up now.
Well, let's say what that means too. If he's in position on us, and he's loosening up a little bit, one, he could think we have ace king, and he doesn't believe us, so he's floating us. You got to remember the float. The float is always a possibility.
Right.
He could be floating with a jack. You know, he could be floating with nothing. He could have middle pair. He could have a nine. And he's just seeing if you're really for real. If you check the turn and he bets, now he could be floating you. You know, you could try to induce a bluff and then lay the hammer down then, too. So
just
some things to be thinking about as you're moving along in this hand, because that is easily a position for this guy to float you. When you check that turn, he's going to bet. So if you check the turn. So be remembering that.
All right, the turn is the queen of clubs, and Harris is great. Not like that hits any draws.
That's a horrible card.
Board is now 9 of clubs, jack of clubs, tray of hearts, queen of clubs, so straight and flush gets there. And remember, we do have the ace of clubs in our hand.
Yeah, we have the ace of clubs, so that's encouraging. Still not anything to hang your hat on, but it's a backdoor if something gets out of hand.
Really is a crappy card.
Oh, man, that's a horrible card. I mean, think about all the cards that would have called you a raise. And all the cards that would have called your bet. And how does that queen not hit them somehow? You know, whether it's the flush, the straight, or even the pair, or two pair.
Right, not results-oriented, but this goes back to if had we just checked the flop. Then it would be less pressure on us to get away from this at this point. Not that I think we'd get away with it, depending on what the action is. Because, again, we do have the redraw to the
ace of clubs, yeah.
Flush, so.
Yeah.
Or a straight, for that matter. So.
Man. Now here, you got to either muster up, you know, the sack to bet, or you got to check and know that if he bets, he's representing, or is it floating, or did he actually hit?
Right? Yeah. So now you don't know, right?
Now you're screwed because you didn't bet enough on that flop either.
I mean, if you check here, your opponent has to bet, I think, right?
Sure.
Because he can't put you on hitting either, unless he does have us on. Oh, no. Actually, even an ace king would work. So, yeah. So he's got a. Whatever the villain is, his story now has to be that this was the best card in the deck for me, and it's the worst card in the deck for you. So he's got to bet now.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the deal. I think because you've got that backdoor chance now, and you still have an overpair, doesn't necessarily mean this guy made that hand. If you're going to put him on a 50-50, that it's a straight or a flush, you know, I mean, yeah, he could hit either one of those, but I think you still can afford to put another bet out. Let's do it.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I can't give up here. If I just check and he bets, what am I going to do?
But I think it's here's what my concern about betting out is that, as I just said, I mean, there's no way that the villain can't bet here, right? He's got to represent that this card helping him, right? So he's going to bet if we check. And if we bet out, I think he's got to raise, too. I don't think he can just call. I think he's got to let you know, hey, I hit this, right?
Well, here's the deal.
So we bet out. Now we're making the pot bigger right now. So
I'd rather 30. Check, you bet 30. Do you think this guy's going to make it 90 representing?
Sure.
When he's only probably got 150 or 200 in front of him, and he's already bet. I don't know. I feel like you need to be some. I don't know. I feel like you got the ace of clubs.
Right.
You got the overpair. The only hand that is going to really be beating you here is two pair or a flush and straight. And that's a lot of hands, but
pretty much the World's Fair.
But are you really? We already know he's going to bet. So what are you going to do? Check call?
Yes, I am actually, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to check call, but I'm going to check call immediately. I'm not even going to hesitate.
If he puts out
that bet, whatever it is, I'm going to say call right away, and I'm going to put that doubt in his mind that I was checking to trap him, and I got it. And, of course, now, you know, see the river and what I could do there. But I think the weak thing here is to check and then have him bet and then hem and haul, like, oh, my gosh, does he have the flush? Does he have the straight? Because then you're just feeding into his storyline, right? But if you check call immediately and confidently, now he's got to think, oh, my God, I stepped into this. And now it gives you the option on the river. I think if you do that, then the river you got to bet out and hopefully take it down at that point if he doesn't have anything. But that's what I'm going to do. Because I think if I bet here, he's going to raise, and then I'm going to have to call that. And even if I do that, I'm going to have to quickly call, too. If not, then I'm showing weakness, right? So either way, I've got to be prepared to call immediately.
You're forgetting something.
I'm forgetting lots of things.
No, let's say we check, okay?
All right.
There's $84 to $88 to $90 in this pot.
Mm-hmm.
This guy thinks you have ace king and you have the ace of clubs or the king of clubs in your hand. Okay, if he's at any, because he knows he can't have the ace, he can't represent the nut flush because you have it except for the straight flush,
right?
So if he shoves now to protect this baby flush,
he can just represent anything.
No, that's what I'm saying. He could represent a baby flush. If he's gonna want to protect that hand, and the right bet is to shove. To bet pot here to protect your hand from a single ace of clubs to get there.
So then let me say, if we bet $30 into this, he's not going to do the same thing?
No, well, I don't know. But if you're betting now, you could be telling him you have the ace and that you're not going to go anywhere. But if you check and then he shoves on you because he's bluffing, then you're going to call automatically? What if he shoves 150 now? You're going to call with just aces and one chance to hit a club? Or if you bet and try to make this guy think, wow, that didn't scare him, I'm folding, or while that didn't scare him and I still haven't hit my hand, I'm going to call, or while that didn't scare him, I might min-raise. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do if we bet. We don't know. You said before that he automatically has to bet to represent it, but how come we can't represent it either? We have the ace of clubs in our hand, so we actually have it.
Yeah, our story isn't set up to confidently be able to bet this as we have it.
Now, if we had ace, king of clubs, you would bet this hand exactly the same way. If you had ace, king of clubs, you'd play it exactly the same way.
I guess we have it. Yeah, we have to.
We have the ace of clubs. So I would just say that I would like a defensive bet here, because if I don't...
Well, you're really narrowing our range down now to something where, you know, we confidently need to bet here. I think more likely of our holdings, it's... The fact that we have a made hand here is much lower than the fact that we have a strong hand that's not made, which is exactly what we have.
I don't want to tell him exactly what we have, but at the same time, I don't want this guy to be able to represent something he doesn't have by merely shoving. Because you said that queen of clubs, if he has to represent that now is hitting him, he's going to protect his hand and shove. If we don't bet... If we don't bet, he's going to shove, and then what do you do? You're going to fold. But if you bet, there's a possibility he won't. You know what I mean? There's no way he checks behind here, so he's going to bet. If he's betting to represent that hand got there,
no way
he's going to protect.
He could be scared, too. So.
Well, if he's going to be scared, then I'll bet and he folds. So right, I would rather bet and have a chance.
No, but he's going to bet anyhow. That's what I keep saying. So
I don't think he bets if I bet. I think he calls. I don't think he necessarily has to raise me if I bet, and then I set the price. Whereas
I think the only way we don't get raised by him is if he has the king of clubs and something else. You know, he's got a strong enough hand that he doesn't feel vulnerable that we have the ace of clubs. If he's got like 6-7 of clubs or something, you're right, he's going to shove. But otherwise, the only reason he's going to call is if he's confident that we're not going to catch up.
Let's say he had king 10 and he had just the king of clubs. He's already got a straight and he's got the second nut flush. He's going to bet. And he's going
two hands, I think, that he's just going to call. All the rest of the hands, he's either going to fold because he's got nothing and he's scared now, which is unlikely, or he's going to raise us because the situation makes it seem like he's hit here and we haven't.
Well, right now we have no situation. A card came, but we don't know what he was calling. He could have been floating. We don't know what he has. We haven't done anything yet on the turn. We haven't bet or anything, so we don't know what... All he did was merely call a flop bet. And we can read all kinds of things into that.
Just right, exactly. But the story he's going to be selling us is that this card helped him.
If he's selling
whether
it,
we bet out or not.
You know what I mean? If we bet out, I don't know if he might have to muster up.
Again, we're all making guesses on what's going to happen. But
right.
My guess is that 75 to 80% of players are going to bet this if they're in that situation because it just makes sense to the story that they're selling.
If we check.
Right. Or
but
if we bet,
I don't know if he can muster up a raise. I don't know if this guy can muster up a raise. That would be $90 here when we have the ace of clubs in our hand.
But he doesn't know we have the ace of clubs in our hand.
But that's what I'm saying. So he's going to have to muster up a huge bluff to do that. I just don't know.
Yeah, but anything he's going to do here is a bluff. But that's why it is. It's a very confident bluff because the way the story came down, most players are going to be like, I knew that card was bad, and fold, right? How many times is that going to happen? A lot. And the guy bets out. I'm like, oh, I'm still going. I'm like, oh. And then you get the raise. I'm like, God. Oh. I knew it. I knew he had the flush. I knew he had the king 10.
Well, you know, so too, you're stuck on the flush. The guy could have made a straight and hated the queen of clubs. He could have hated the queen of clubs. You know what I mean?
That's true, too.
And so now we're betting, and he's like, damn. Now, what's he do if he's got him only straight? He's just going to call. Then we hit our club on the river, and now we're good. Or if we miss, he may check behind.
He's only going to call if he really thinks that we have the flush. And I think it's unlikely the way we played that we have the flush. You're right. We could have the ace, king, clubs, and have the flush. But more likely, we've got something else. We've got a pair or something like to do.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to bet like 30, 35. And you're going to check. And then
and you're going to be wrong.
All right.
All right, let's see what happens here. All right, our hero says, I do think it's possible the villain may have been on a flush draw or even a straight draw, but even if he is, I'm drawing live with my ace of clubs, so I bet $27.
See? He bet.
And he calls.
And he calls. You said there was only two hands that could call.
Well, we haven't gotten to the end of the hand yet.
All right, so what are the two hands you said? King 10.
King, yeah, he's got the straight, or he's got like a
baby high flush. Yeah, okay.
King high flush, baby flush. He's going to raise king high. The reason I say king high is because he's fairly confident his hand is going to hold up. If you've got 6-7 of clubs, then you're worried all kinds of different clubs could come and ruin it.
Okay, so you don't think that he would raise with with the King of Clubs, even though the Ace of Clubs could be a likely
probably
card.
Could, but that we were talking about what hands you'd call it, and that's a hand that I think you would call it.
Okay.
You don't think just as likely to raise with it, but all right. You could call it.
All right, so two hands. I want to see at the end of this hand, this guy has a two hands, you said.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay,
you said we'll there was see. Only two hands, what you said, so I want to hear this. I can't wait to get to the end of this hand and see what happens.
You know, it's been like 4 months since this hand came.
I have no idea.
All right, so the river brings the nine of hearts. So our flush doesn't come in. And our hero says either you had the straight or flush or you didn't. I feel like you didn't.
Well, way back when this hand first started 3.5 years ago, I did say that the guy could be floating with middle pair of nines. So that nine hurts if that happened. Other than that.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Other than that, that's only one specific hand. I think I'll probably check, but I'm going to call anything he bets that's reasonable because it paired the board and the flush and the straights are all there. And
yeah, it's an interesting card, isn't it? Because you're right. If he had that middle pair, he just caught up to us. If he had a straight or flush, it doesn't matter. He already has beat.
Right.
But if he had something else, if he had like a jack or a queen, now we've got, two pair at some point before that.
Now we caught him.
Yeah.
Right. If
not counting
the nine. If he turned queen jack, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now we've caught him, right? So, obviously we would have liked to see the club come and be more confident here, but I actually think this nine's probably a good card for us.
Yeah.
But you're right. I'm not going to bet it. I'm going to check.
Yeah, I'm not going to bet it, but I'm not going to be afraid of a bet if it's something reasonable, like 40 or whatever.
Now I can take my time on the call because, I'm killing you. The action's dead at this point. So
right.
I can take a time and really get a read on them and whatever else. Whereas I think it was important for my story on the turn to check call quickly.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm with you. I like check calling reasonable.
All right, here we go. Here it says, I decided to check with the intention of calling because I think if he didn't hit the flush or straight, he's going to bluff the river when it looks like I've given up. He bets $39, and I call.
Yeah, I said 40, so that's definitely something I'm calling. So
excellent.
I'll agree with that.
He shows 10-9.
Oh, man, that like hits everything. It hits the nines we talked about. It makes you so wrong with your guesses. 10-9, brutal. All right, so let's see how we could have changed this situation.
All right, so he had an open-ended a straight draw. I didn't consider that. With a pair to boot. So, all right.
Yeah, that's tough, though, because, all right, so he's floating with the nines, doesn't believe us, picks up the straight draw, so that's why he only called.
Yeah,
and that's a hand that would have just called and I said you were forgetting the straight, but I was thinking the mage straight, not a straight draw.
Yeah, not a straight draw. Yeah,
yeah.
Very interesting. But
wow, 9-10. That's my favorite hand.
Yeah,
for
I
obvious reasons.
It was suited, but that seems a little loose call out of
a loose call.
Pre-flop raise from the big blind, right? And not suited makes a big difference, but I think it's one of those things where it pushes you into that, you know, when you're coin flipping, the coin's bent a little bit.
do you call the flop bet too with just nines? Because you're floating, right? You don't believe him, and if he checks the turn, then you bet out.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. What did we bet there?
27.
It was weak, right? It was weaker than we thought, right? So 22.
Oh, it was bet on the flop. It was 22. Yeah.
22. Yeah. There's a lot of money in there. I got a piece of it, right? I don't know what his suits were too, so I don't know if he had a club in there. If he had a club, that'd make it easier. But
have you a ton of clubs?
But what's interesting about it is if I was going to make that call there, then I wouldn't just call a turn either. I would make that. It's almost kind of like a semi bluff float, right?
I don't know.
Because I'd call that nine, and then on the turn, I would want to come alive, right? And then we didn't. Now it's probably because now we're like, oh, now my hand got a little bit better, which is weird because it's almost easier to semi bluff now that we got more outs, right?
Yeah, but he'd have to make it like 84 to make it a believable bet when all you have is a pair of nines and a draw, so not even close to the nuts either because the flush has already gotten there.
It didn't make sense that we had the flush. So we were representing the fact that we had it, whether we had it or not. So I really do think that check on that turn is weak. And at that point, you're giving up unless you hit something that helps. And he did. He hit a nine. And then he bet 27 on that too, right? So he wasn't even confident at that point.
Yeah. Huh. Wow, 9-10. Yeah, I pre-flop too. I think I'm letting the 9-10 go to somebody who's, if, of course, if you sure. bet 18 or 20 and you're out of position, you're folding that hand. They're folding for you, but you didn't. You only bet 12, which is what you would normally raise with no limpers. You know, so with four limpers, he should have made it way more than 12, and that guy probably gets out of the way with 9-10 anyway.
Yeah, again, this is the difference between a cash game and a tournament. I don't see why you would want him called this ten, with this 10-9.
Yeah,
the cash game. I mean, a tournament, you gotta have a little gamble in you. A cash game, why? Yeah. Throw it away. Terrible situation to be in.
Sorry, bud.
Because then it forces you to do what we just talked about, making that semi-bluff on the turn, which you didn't like, and I would have done it, and you were right, it would have been expensive, but that's the situation you got in by splashing around 10-9 for no reason.
Yeah, and you would have made a ton of money at the end, but if we had come along with
right.
it.
Right, oh yeah, absolutely.
But I think that I think we learned that Dave could have played this better from the beginning with better bet sizing, and really just really better play there.
Yeah, he said, so I was basically right that he hadn't hit the flusher straight, yet I still lost. Ugh, he probably called the flop because I do use a continuation bet. So if I had ace-king, for example, he was good.
Right.
And the queen gave him an open-ended straight draw. Sigh. Yeah.
But the clubs, though, the clubs were pretty scary, which is probably why he only called, too, with that straight or with that straight draw on the line.
I'll still argue that those clubs should have been good for him. But,
yeah.
You know.
No, I see your point, absolutely. So, all right, well, can't wait to hear about the cruise next week. Looking forward to that. Watch out for that buoy. All right. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Love.
We'll see you at the table.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.